Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good evening. It's me, the Monk.
Have you ever listened to Trash Station Thoughts? That doesn't seem too hard. I can do that. Well, you're in luck, because today I want to talk about Anchor, the easiest way to make podcasts, and it's completely free. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many, many more. I mean, it's literally what we're using now. They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. And you can add any songs from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are literally endless. You can make anything, music analysis, talk shows, or even an anime podcast that talks about anime. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So if you want to give podcasting a go, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Anyway, back to the episode.
Lads, welcome back to another episode of the Trash Taste Podcast. I'm lad number one, and I'm with lad number two and three, as always. And I've got a lad sitting next to me. Who are you?
Just a lad, right?
I'm just some fucking guy.
We just found an Australian guy.
Yeah. I was like, I thought I was the only one.
No, not today.
So after many months, yes, moons, we finally have the one and only Mr. Kevin Penkin on the show.
How's it?
Hell yeah. Aside from being just an Aussie lad, what else are you known for?
Yeah.
Not much, mate. Okay. So I guess like on a good day, I write music for anime and games. On a bad day, I'm just some fucking guy on a couch drinking a beer and watching YouTube. it's not a bad day, actually. On a professional day, I am writing music for anime and video games, as I said, some of those being Made in Abyss and Tower of God and Rising of the Shield Hero, and also did Star Wars Visions, one of the episodes for Star Wars Visions, which not the worst thing to happen to. I guess me. I don't know.
Are you modest?
You know? Composers for Star Wars. Not the worst thing to happen.
Not the worst. Yes.
Not the worst.
That'd be on my tombstone. Not the worst.
I think the thing that is because I've never asked you this. I'm just like, how the hell did this happen? How do you?
Yeah,
because it seems like Japanese anime would want to get Japanese composers. So how did this all come around?
And I guess they have for the longest time, right?
Yeah. So what's your background with music and life?
I mean,
how did you end up here?
Well, it's a very super random kind of series of events that I don't really understand how it happened. Happy it did, but I have no idea actually how it happened. But I guess the chronological events is that I actually started working in the end of my teens. I started working with the Final Fantasy composer Nobuo Uematsu.
Wow,
yeah, which is awesome.
How did that happen?
Yeah. Okay, sorry, let's go back.
No one just works with Nobuo Uematsu.
Let's go back to conception.
Yeah,
where was you?
Your local neighborhood friend Nobuo Uematsu. You know,
I just saw a guy at the bar once, and I just ended up composing with the composer of Final Fantasy.
What? I thought you said conception. I was like, well. Yeah. So I had always wanted to do video game music. I remember because my first game console was GameCube, and I played this game called Metroid Prime, which is still my favorite game.
Amazing game.
Right.
Yeah, it is one of my favorites. When I played the game, I was like, I want to do that. And so that's basically what happened. I was like, oh, I want to do that one.
Yeah. Right.
And so kind of just started, pretending to write video game music. And Australia also had a bunch of video game concerts that happened, including the Final Fantasy concerts.
Yeah.
In a slightly different... Did you just burp?
No.
I thought I had this click thing. I was like...
There's a clicking thing.
Okay. Well, I'll shut the fuck up then.
Did you interrupt my story?
No, fucking dead.
I fucked up my memory. Australia had all these kind of concerts going on. I met a conductor called Arnie Roth, who did some concerts called Play. And so I went over from Perth, Western Australia, from where I'm from, went over to Sydney to do this, to kind of view this this concert, and he invited me to come say hello to him and also one of the composers there, who's the Silent Hill composer, Akira Yamaoka. So I met him.
Right.
That was really cool. And he was like super kind of, he was very, very generous with his time for like some eager, you know, piece of shit 15 year old.
Wow. Yeah. Right,
so I really appreciate that even to this day. But because I met Arnie, when I saw that Uematsu-san was going to come to a concert in Seattle, places, I was like, hey, so we might come over, like me and my dad might come over and come say hi.
Right.
And they were like, oh, well, thank you for coming such a long way from Perth, which is like 36 hours in a plane. Right. Don't recommend that, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, we spent like 36 hours going to Seattle, met Arnie, and then he was like, oh, just come to the dress rehearsal and come say hi as well to Uematsu and stuff. And
wow.
So, wait, yeah.
So you're just going to these concerts? And you just
we went to
hi?
That one, yeah.
Right. You could just say hi?
Well, because we met at that previous one in Sydney. We were able to kind of come over and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, it was very, very lucky.
Yeah, you make it sound very easy.
So you met him initially and you just bumped into him initially? Or you like?
No. So like we had been invited to come say hi at this concert in Sydney, which then led to this concert in Seattle where Uematsu-san was, where we met for the first time.
Right.
And Australia, all the school, sort of all the school years are flipped. Because it's summer.
Because it's Australia.
Yeah.
Because it's Australia, yeah. Everything's reversed.
Like,
yeah.
Of course, you've got to flip it. Like,
so our physically. Summer holiday is December.
Yeah.
And so that's when we have like the classic school, like 2-3 month kind of break.
Right.
Especially like all of December and January is just off.
Okay.
But that was obviously like New Year's and stuff and Christmas in Japan. So for summer holiday, we would go to winter in Japan.
Right.
End up. They very graciously say hello. Yeah, you can come say hi and stuff. And eventually, that just led to a couple of it's like small. It's not the Final Fantasy game. I should be very clear about
that. Right.
But I was
But you made some pretty insane connections from that.
Yeah, it's still pretty crazy to talk about. But it's
it sound so easy. Like, you know,
just like had them on speed dial. After
Just went to a concert and then just went to another concert and then just things happen and then I am.
Honestly, at the end of the day, I'm just happy it happened. I mean, I know I've been using that word a little bit today, but it's like I'm just super just things have just. Yeah, panned out not so shit over the
I'm trying to piece the whole thing in my head together. Like,
me too.
How it all comes together.
Yeah.
So you met him again at another concert.
Yeah.
And how did that translate into then working for them? Because surely that's a massive leap.
Well, we had because of these Japanese trips that I would do over Australian summer, Japanese winter. Basically, what happened is we were able to just kind of keep a connection, and then eventually, like, I kept on submitting some CDs and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
In this case, it worked out. But you know, it's like you never think about it that way. You're just hoping the best to just just want to be involved in some way.
Yeah, it
feels nice.
So you just like kept submitting your work, and okay.
I mean, more like God bless them. They actually, listen to it.
Yeah, obligation to do.
I would not hold it against them to not do it, but they graciously kind of did. And eventually, I'm happy to say that I was able to be useful to them. So
So you were like making music from like as early as like how old? I assume very, very young, right? Like, were you like classically trained and stuff? Or?
Yeah. So I played flute. I came from flute.
So see you playing flute is just such a funny history.
I can do the Anchorman solo.
Oh really?
Yeah, I can do it. I'm so like that's
why didn't you bring your flute?
Sorry, I left it in Melbourne. I actually like picked it up a little bit last year, like during the pandemic. So I was like, I'm fucking bored now. So try again, and ended up using it a bit on the new Shield Hero and stuff. So I did some jazz flute.
Oh wow!
Snuck that in.
Hell yeah!
Cheeky jazz flute. A little cheeky jazz flute.
So you started with flute from like really young, and then you kind of just went on from there.
Yeah, flute playing. Played Metroid Prime. Wanted to write music. Played on. I'm not sure if you know Finale.
Yeah.
Finale for a little while, and like didn't understand what like. Working with actual DAWs and stuff, which are digital audio
workstations.
Yeah, so like Logic Pro and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Logic Pro is eventually what I moved to, and I still use it today.
It's very overwhelming when you look at it. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I know nothing about audio. I'm that guy today. I'm like the Connor of this episode. I'm like, that's letters that you're saying right now.
I know more for once.
For once, yeah.
Well. hate to say it, but Connor was kind of right with the whole Beavs and Boofs thing a little bit.
Oh, we're getting into that already?
What?
Yo.
What?
Wow. No. No.
I hate to say it, but I like the noise is the most accurate way to describe how I feel about music as well.
Right. Oh my God. You're a literal musician. You do this for a living.
Oh my
God.
My life has been a lie.
Dude, like, I remember when Connor first brought up the whole like Beeps and Boop shit. I was like, don't worry. Eventually when we get Kevin, he'll be on my
side. Yeah.
Well, I won't lie. I like opened a bottle of gin and just started drinking after that. Right? I was just like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? At the same time, I was like, to be honest, like, yeah, maybe we'll go into like a little bit more detail about why the noise is nice, but the noise is nice. Yeah, I mean,
That's it. It's just like, I like the things my ear is feeling. You know, I like hearing the noise. Yeah. It's just a soothing.
But we should explore why.
What?
Why?
That's a level that he's never crossed before. Yeah, no,
I feel like it's the most primitive way of experiencing music, like the way that it was just meant. Like,
is there any other way to experience music?
Well, because everyone wants to add this super kind of like deep art meaning, and I'm like, noise is nice. You know, like it's just kind of like I don't listen to a piece of music and feel any emotion.
Yeah.
I just take it in, and I'm like.
No, I mean, we all do, but we also it's that plus alpha for us, you know, it's not just the alpha, right? Like,
best maybe describe it as like, okay, so noise is nice, but it's the noise is nice because like certain things that are working together
make
said nice noise.
Yeah.
This is why I brought you on today, to explain this concept.
Fucking go.
In the most monkey way possible.
Not stupid way like I would explain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because like, it's just made up of like, random kind of, what's the word? I guess sort of categories. So it's like you got melody, you got harmony, you got rhythm and stuff like that. You got texture. Texture is really, really important. So texture is like in my
what is texture?
Texture is the sound quality. The quality of a sound.
That's like
you're sounding like an alien right now. I was like, what is this texture you humans speak of?
I don't normally talk to musicians, and normally when I hear someone talk about texture, it's with like food or like with things that you feel with your hands.
Same concept,
or touch.
Like,
same thing, yeah.
It's the exact same concept. It's like, okay, okay, you know the, I think it's Billie Jean, you know the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The drums,
so the drum sound is super distinctive.
Yes.
Because it's anyone can play that beat and anyone can play that, like a drum like that.
Right.
But why does it sound, why do you know that it's that fucking song straight away? Because the sound of the drum. The textual quality of this drum, specific and unique.
Right.
So that's the whole idea of texture. It's like texture, I think, is criminally, well, not criminally, and I can't pronounce that fucking word right now. But
primitively.
Primitively underrated. No, texture is like, I guess I would call it like kind of the secret ingredient. Even though it's not that secret. And, you know.
It's the spice that you add to make it all come together.
It is all
right.
There's many spices.
Yeah.
I see like we've inadvertently like separated the musicians on one side and like the apes on the other side.
It's got like a glass panel here. I think there's what I say. Don't fucking come near it.
Yeah. So, okay.
I feel like we talk about anime.
Yeah.
I get it.
Okay, so you started, you know, doing, you know, writing music from a young age. You met Nobuo Uematsu. So like, how did you then go from like that to, oh, now I'm writing music for Made in Abyss?
That's
because I feel again that's like not like one step process.
Yeah,
you know?
There were a couple of steps.
So, number one, how did you learn Japanese? Because I assume you would need to learn Japanese to work in the anime.
Right. I mean, obviously, I'm not this beautiful boy when it comes to that. But you know, I feel like I do fine.
Yeah.
I feel like I do well, and I learned Japanese in Australia. There's this thing called TAFE, which is sort of a
community college kind of thing.
It's like community college,
university.
It's like you could treat it as like a pre-college almost at some time.
You can do
certificate level stuff.
So
bachelor certificate,
right?
Sort of underneath that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I did that because I went to school at the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, WAPA, as it's called.
Mm. Yeah.
WAPA.
So I went to WAPA for 3 years doing composition there.
Yeah.
That was in Perth. But then at nighttime, So I remember, I'm trying to imagine me doing this now, like going to school during the day and like go to school during the night. And I was I do not have that energy. I do not have that energy at all anymore.
Congrats on being 30, by the way. Welcome to the club, Kevin. Welcome to the club.
I am lit tired. I can't even use the jet lag excuse anymore. So I went to this TAFE school on like a Thursday and a... let's try that again. Tuesday and a Thursday.
Yeah.
Tuesday and a Thursday. And on the middle day, the Wednesday, I would go with all the classmates that I was learning with, and we'd go to this seedy fucking bar in Northbridge, which is like kind of like the I don't even know how to describe it. It's the
seedy part of Perth.
It is the like club crazy like seedy, you know,
Perth.
I've heard a lot of things about Perth from every Australian I've met, and one pattern that I've seen from every Australian I've met from Perth is that they no longer live in Perth anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I know four people, including you, who were born and raised in Perth, who are no longer in Perth.
So like I would say that if you've grown up there, there is like a certain like,
shout out to our fans in Perth.
Look, there is a certain like jovial sort of jokey aspect to like saying, oh yeah, I'm from Perth, fucking what? But like, once you leave, I think there is like a little bit of homesickness. Like I haven't been.
Oh, of course.
But I fucking miss it so much.
I might
be there for 2.5 weeks and be like, yeah, I'm cool.
How do you feel?
Bye, Felicia. But you know, until then, I'm pretty homesick. So we went to this bar in Northbridge because Perth is super, super popular with working holiday Japanese people.
Oh, really?
Super popular.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, Japanese people love coming to Perth, and that's great. And it is for what it's worth, even though I just like kind of described like a suburb of Perth.
I'm just like some fucking. I'm trying to wrap my head around what the reason that might be.
Joey, like I've never seen that facial expression on Joey where he tried to understand either his Japanese side or his Australian side. Yeah. And he's just like, there is something that's gone wrong in my culture.
Both my Australian and Japanese side were like, that sounds like a lie.
As far as I can remember, it's not, but yeah,
right. It's I wonder why though.
Honestly, sun. Sun and beaches.
Right.
Yeah. Fair. And wine. Huh. Lots of wine.
Fair.
That's why they don't come to the UK, huh?
No.
I really hear about Japanese people in London that often.
Yeah.
No.
Not really.
Well, of course, like it's also very far away, but I guess so is Australia now that I think about it.
Yeah, Perth's pretty fucking far away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like
nothing.
Yeah. That's true.
There is a connection between Australia and Japan. I mean, there's quite a lot of sister cities and stuff.
Right.
It's like sort of the Australasia region. Sorry if that's triggering for y'all.
Yeah.
but the Australasia region is obviously, I think there's a lot of, I mean, pre-COVID, of course, there was a lot of like kind of travel treaties and stuff like that. Working holiday visas were rampant.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
Definitely.
Yeah. But we would go to this bar and all the working holiday people, because it was a shitty bar, but on a Wednesday night, it would be international night. $10 jugs, and which is like, I think like £7, like $8.5 American dollars.
Yeah. Right.
And you just get fucking wasted with awesome like working holiday Japanese people. And because obviously when you're a bit toasted, your language confidence.
Of course.
Somehow it just raises up.
Okay,
let's fucking konnichiwa. Yeah, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And so you would almost have like the two formal training days on each side. And then you'd have like the
training day.
The toasted night. And your brain would just like sponge it up. That's how it started. And then actually, like since COVID, we've been doing a lot more like kind of business meetings and stuff on Zoom and stuff. And so like my Keigo has like gone way through the roof now, because that's how I almost exclusively speak, like sort of with that. I almost treat it as like a buffer. It almost feels like a buffer. If you're not sure how to speak to someone, using the Keigo almost feels like
being safe.
Safety.
You don't know where your like relationship is.
Polite. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like I'm just gonna avoid any like, you know, faux pas being overly polite.
I did notice that actually, because like a couple of months ago that we did the Made in Abyss event.
So I
co-hosted like a Made in Abyss event for Made in Abyss 2, and obviously Kevin wasn't there like in person, but he was on like a Zoom call because there was like a segment where we were talking about the music for the show. And you know, obviously because it's a Japanese event, so it's live streamed to a Japanese audience.
Yeah.
Kevin had to speak Japanese for the entire part.
Yeah.
And you know, I hadn't heard Kevin speak Japanese in a while, so I was like, oh, you know, hopefully, you know, he'll get through it.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, he's K-going the fuck up. Like, I was like, he's like way too polite in this entire thing. He's like talking to the fucking prime minister levels. I'm like, he's just like, talking about like the music.
It's like, well, the problem is because I've almost like lost the middle ground now. So it's like too casual, or it's way too formal.
Right.
And I was like, just in because it's like something. Instead of saying like yes or something, I'd be just like this.
Yeah.
Well, like, that's just like you in a nutshell, right? Because like you, one thing you'll realize meeting Kevin is like he's like the most humble and nice person like you've ever met, you know. But then that is until like he starts getting like a few pints in him, and like I can always like you can always track how drunk Kevin is by how much more Australian he is. So at the beginning of the night, you're like, you might not even know that he's Australian or something, like, because he's like way too polite.
Kevin is either extremely professional or extremely unprofessional. there's no middle.
That doesn't sound like what you're talking about. Fuck it. Give me your lighter. Yeah. Oh, that's flip.
Because you were saying like I definitely experienced that this weekend, right? Because you know, obviously, like during the convention, you know, we'd go out and have a couple of drinks and all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. And it's like, you know, that Friday night where we're out, you know, drinking, and we got that Burger King at like 2 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Man, and bringing that up, you want that to be committed to YouTube? Forever?
Yeah. Because like, you know, Carl was saying like, you know, Kevin is drunk because he just gets like exponentially Australian, right? And I think that Burger King night was the most Aussie I've ever heard Kevin.
I was so bitter about that burger. It fucking sucked. It was so shit.
That's Burger King.
Yeah, I know, but like there was like first of fucking 2:30 in the morning. I was like, there's only so many old fashions I can have.
I'm not expecting you to make great decisions here. I'm just saying.
So to explain, it's like 2:30 in the morning. Obviously, everyone's like drunk, and you know, everyone's starting to get the little bit hungry, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a Burger King there. Kevin comes out with like a bag full of what he thinks is like just a light snack, right? What he pulls out of the bag is like the fattest double whopper that I've ever seen in my life. And he pulls it out of the bag and he's like, in the most Australian way, he's like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, oh, fuck it, I've already bought it, it's whatever.
So just like, this just like goes back to like that fucking izakaya thing where I ordered too much. Can I just fucking hit the button? Hit the button.
Oh my God. When you go for your drinks, you're like, this is an amazing idea. I can handle all of this.
So to explain that.
So much ambition.
Last time we went out to Japan, we went to an izakaya, and then Kevin was like pretty hungry. You know, we started drinking before, but Kevin was like, we were hungry, but we were also like just like a little bit tipsy. And Kevin thinks, you know what's a good idea? If I order one of everything on the menu.
It's like a 4-page menu. It's 4 pages of menu for just the chicken. And then it was like 4 pages of menu for like the pork.
It was like an onslaught. It did not stop.
Yeah. I've never had to, like, because it's a fucking all you can eat. Like, you can just do it. But like, at the same time, I was like, yeah, we had to, like, I was like, I had to talk to the fucking staff member and be like, can you stop?
Can you stop?
Any food like, that you have not physically cooked yet, stop it.
Because it was like, there was like 15 different livers. And I'm like, how do you even find this many livers? Like, I'm done.
You're going to salt the shit.
So like, we learned that day. If we go to an izakaya and there's a tablet there, we can order. Never give it to Kevin. Because he's just like, oh, what does everyone want? And everyone's just like, oh, just whatever. And Kevin takes that too literally as everything.
But like, because you know, I think it's just because like, you know, I haven't been back home to Australia in a while, yeah, right? And yeah, like, you know, I have a couple of mates in Australia who are like very, very awkward, but like, you know, Kevin is like next level Australian, especially when he's drunk. So he was like,
a little perf, so like,
you know, going back, it's like he like unwraps the double whopper, right? Because he's like, he's already has it in his hand. He takes like 3 bites out of it, and he just goes, "This is shit. This is so shit."
I think I remember that. What was shit about?
It was so dry. It was like so dry.
It was so dry, and it was so heavy.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I fucked up. Okay, like, I fucked because like in Australia we don't have Burger King, we have Hungry Jack's. Hungry Jack's,
right? Good. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So it's like, you know, if Burger King was like better,
it's good.
It's fucking yeah. Like Hungry Jack's is like, I would argue way, way better than Burger King.
Yeah, but like, but not by much.
Not by much, to be fair.
Sorry,
no.
I don't know if I'm crazy, but I swear Burger King, don't they like drench it in like sauce?
Yeah. I wish.
So fucking dry.
That would right. Be
like
good.
The burger is like the most like skeleton-esque burger ever.
Yeah.
Like extremely anemic.
Yeah. I had the
snap the patty in half.
Yeah. I had the chicken like there was like a long chicken burger type of thing. Yeah. And it was like it was freeze dried. It was so fucking dry. I was like,
McDonald's is really good fried chicken.
Yeah.
It was a bad tactical error then. Yeah. That we'll hopefully not make again.
Yeah. But it's just so hilarious. Just Kevin raging at a double whopper at 2:30 in the morning.
I remember I've got a good friend back home. I remember because I took him to this like really like I there's this Ankara bakery thing on it's called Beaufort Street in Mount Lawley.
What?
Yeah, there's a place there's an Ankara bakery on Beaufort Street in Mount Lawley in Perth. What did I say?
This is Beaufort Street.
I'm sorry.
I'm a child.
All right, all of our eyes just like gleam like Beaufort.
I'm gonna blame the dry London air. Not very successful. Anyway, Beaufort Street in Mount Lawley in Perth, and like they do like really good kebabs. They're fucking amazing kebabs.
Right.
But my friend was not a fan of them. I remember because he said the same thing, and he tried to throw it out, and it exploded all over his car. So this egg just fucking went all over his body and shit.
At least he tried to throw it. It's
yeah. So oh my God. I thought I brought that up. But I was like, yeah. Yeah, but there is like, yeah, there's food rage. There's a lot of food rage.
So, so back to your music. This is
the process.
Get inspired by dry burgers.
Have a fucking shit burger and go write some fucking angry music.
Oh my God.
This burger fucking sucks.
Oh my God.
Music.
Yeah. Why don't you call like a track and shield here just like dry chicken sandwich?
I have started going like more like psycho with the naming conventions recently. So that might.
I'm waiting for double whopper at 2 a.m.
Whopper and fries.
Double whopper.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
The names only appear on like the soundtracks, right? They don't appear in the show, right? So you could just make.
No, I mean, if you're doing like an OP or an ED, they do have the opening. In the opening credits to say, like, you know,
These tracks. Dry Chicken Sandwich by Kevin Hank.
Dry Chicken Sandwich OP for insert anime here. People never heard from him.
No, because I did notice in some of your tracks in Shield Hero, like, I think the first Shield Hero, there were like some weird names in there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get out now because they were like some of like the usual suspect names of, you know, like generic anime music names, and then there was just So you go through this soundtrack list, and most of them are like, you know, normal. You know, you have a track that's called The Rising of the Shield Hero.
Of course, the titular title. Yes.
Of course, you know, you have like some, you know, isekai type list, type track called like Game Start and stuff like that. And then you go down to like near the bottom, and then there's a track called like Spirit Bomb. And I'm like, huh, that was that like a cheap Dragon Ball Z reference? Probably is. It's Kevin. Okay, we can get away with that. Yeah. We can get away with that. And then you're just like, boom, boom, boom. And you're like, Kevin, are you kind of running out of names? And then you go down even further. And then you just, there's a track just called Noms.
I forgot about that.
I listen to the track and I'm just like, this name has nothing to do with the track at all. And then the you go next, and it's like Matty Boy.
Matty Boy. Who's Matty Boy?
Who's Matty Boy? I want to know.
I can't explain the noms. I'm out on that one. My bad on that one, but
that was a 2 a.m. chicken sandwich.
I can really go for BK right now. Noms.
What was the first one you said it was? It was
Spirit Bomb.
Oh, boom, boom, boom. Oh, boom, boom. The interview? Like with Franco and Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
The one that like got Sony hacked by North Korea.
Yeah.
No, because like when they finally like shoot down Kim Jong-un in the movie, fucking Franco's character just goes boom, 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 and like fires a tank bullet into the helicopter. And that's the reference.
That's it. What's that got to do with Shield Hero?
Fucking nothing.
Is it even like a boomy track? It's just like,
I can't know. I think so. Yeah. No, it is a little bit. It's like a battle thing.
The checklist. It was like 50 plus tracks.
It's a lot. Yeah, that one.
How many? That's how many? That seems like excessive almost.
Because it was 26 episodes, it was 25 or 26 episodes, so that required. So basically what happens as I'm sure you all know, but just for clarity and all that sort of thing, so there's normally cores, so one core, two cores sort of thing.
Like a season kind of.
One core is 12 or 13 episodes. Two core is like 24 or 26 episodes, something along that length. And so for example, Main Abyss season one, of course, is like 13 episodes, so it's
one core. Right.
But Shield Hero had 26 episodes, you got two core.
Yeah.
So normally for two cores, you kind of, you don't double the music, but you probably like 1.5 times it.
Right.
Okay. So for Main Abyss, the season one, I think the soundtrack comes in at 1 hour and 52 minutes or something like that.
Right.
And I think it's about, I think that was actually about 50 something tracks, or like maybe 40, mid 40 tracks.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. But then Shield Hero, it was about 60, 62 tracks. And it's about 2 hours and 50 minutes of music.
And is that like left up to you? Do you decide how many tracks you're making?
No,
they're like, hey, we need 62 tracks, make them all sound
different. It's actually pretty specific. So what basically happens is when you get commissioned to write anime music, you get a massive Excel sheet called the music order.
Yeah.
So when you get the music order, it's basically, just like, it'll have like M1, like music one, and then it'll say like main theme. And then M2 will be like main theme, happy version. And then like M3 will be main theme, dark version. Or something
M4,
main theme, hero version. Or something like that.
Just
quite generic sort of like descriptions, and they might have some explanation, or they might have some, you know, some visual images and stuff like that. So you actually get a lot of freedom, which I really, really like. So if you think about how, like, because they'll have all that sort of thing, and then maybe once you get to like M20, it'll be like battle one, speed battle, or like battle two.
Oh,
like serious.
That's all
serious. Sometimes, I mean, we can get very specific as well, but like it'll start from that sort of like slightly more abstract sort of approach, which is actually really, really cool, because that way you actually do have a lot of kind of, like I said, freedom to actually just try to explore different ideas
a track Noms.
Well, I guess the track name doesn't really matter, right?
When you're writing it, this has changed, like my process on this has changed like a little bit since Shield Hero, admittedly, so I probably wouldn't do that again, but
it was a process
eventually. When you're writing, what I like to do is try and match a lot of like sort of the textual stuff I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I love trying to match text to the actual visual palette, if you will.
Yeah.
Best way, like one of the most sort of like sort of basic examples or classic examples I can give is in Made in Abyss, obviously, like, it's quite a small amount of, like, kind of kid characters going into, like, a huge, like, cavernous abyss. Sort of explore. And also, you see in the visuals, it's not, there's normally a lot of wide shots where you just see kind of the small characters. It just goes, far. And so, like, the idea of trying to actually depict that visual sort of stimuli in music is quite appealing to me. It's sort of, almost like a, it's called, like, word painting. Which is basically like say you have lyrics and say, I am going to rise up, and then the melody goes, I am going to rise up. It's literally rising with them.
Rising with the shield.
Well, actually, because in the main theme, it like the violin start part of the start does actually rise up. And like, it sounds so basic, but it is good fun. A lot of the like chord stuff in Made in Abyss also like it's all about descension. So you hear a lot of like, normally it's normally going down or up, but like like the whole idea of like things rising and falling as best as possible.
Like one thing I've always wondered is pretty much how you like blew up onto the scene, because I think like you blew up immediately in terms of like sound, in terms of being a composer, which is like I find it's really rare. But I think a big part of that was just that opening scene in Made in Abyss, where it was just like the instrumental with like the vocals as well. And it was just no dialogue. It was just like a montage, just using this opening track. And it just like immediately, it not only did it sell you on the show, but it just like put your work onto the map. Like, how did that come about? Was that planned or was that just like a happy coincidence?
I was like, totally lucky, and I'm glad I was like almost, because I had a different track, I had a much more subtle track in mind for that, called Swings and Roundabouts. That was like kind of my original idea for that thing, because it was supposed to be like, oh, let's do these nice kind of really cool textures and stuff as the light kind of comes over. But then the sound director and the director decided differently to kind of, because like you don't write these unless it's a movie or it's a specific scene that's been requested to be written synchronized to picture.
Yeah,
all the music is written what's called free,
right?
And then it's synced later.
So that wasn't meant to be synced at all.
Originally, my vision of it was to be different, but the director and the director and the sound director obviously had a pretty deep discussion. They decided to put that song there, and even better, they decided to put it there with minimal dialogue and sound effects, which is ridiculously like lucky.
Yeah,
and so just to, you know, I guess just to like, how to even explain this? To see that happen and to be so happily wrong about my vision was for that.
Yeah.
I think I was just like, oh man, thank God people are smarter than me. because that song was written just as sort of almost just like another, like trying to make another palette for the soundtrack. Because when you start it, you're just kind of going through like point after point after point. It's like, okay, well, let's just try and write a piece of music based off this manga panel. Or let's try and write a piece of music based off this description or this idea, you know. Obviously, like reading through the content and stuff and just trying to see what happens.
So I was thinking like, oh yeah, they must, what do they give you? I'm like, oh yeah, you can just go to the manga most of the time, right?
If manga, or in Tower of God, you got manga as well. It really is helpful. I mean,
it's
super helpful. And so just when you're able to like kind of look at essentially you can just see the entire story kind of pan out. Obviously you're given like anime specific materials as well, which is super, super helpful. When you're just trying to find something that actually kind of hopefully what's the best word? Respects the content as well. You know, you're kind of creating, you're adding an audio element that was not there before. Whereas the manga might be there before, so there might be reference, you know, people might be able to reference the anime to the manga and say, okay, well, this is similar, this is different, something like that.
Right.
The music never existed. So it's both freeing and also kind of terrifying to, you know, potentially mess that up.
Yeah, that's insane, because like when I saw that scene, I was like, this is so perfect for this opening scene. Yeah. It must have been like specifically made for this one scene.
Right.
It was made around like scenes like that. I would almost describe it more as like it was almost an impression of the show itself.
Yeah. Did you feel like, because that was your first, was that your first anime work?
No, sir. It was, that was my third.
That was your third?
Yeah. That was your third. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Wow.
All right. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So, no, the first one was, it's all with the same company, Kinema Citrus, but we did something called Nor 9.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What is that?
Nord 9 is... Well, actually, it was a video game, and it was actually a video game I did with Uematsu, like, way back when. Huh. So he did the theme for that. I did the BGM for this game called Nord 9.
Right.
And a couple of years later, when I started doing anime for this company called Kinemon Citrus, they said, we're actually doing an anime of Nord 9 as well.
Right.
And so that, I didn't...
So
I
you were, like, the natural pick for
that. Yeah, maybe that was it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that was it.
Because, like, I mean, I guess, I guess, you know, it makes sense to get the guy who did the game, right?
Yeah.
So,
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it.
What?
Is that not obvious?
No. As I sit here now in my fucking 30s, just fucking sipping sparkling water.
You're like, wow, what a coincidence.
No, but
what a happy little coincidence.
Like, that wasn't like a five-head observation. Like, I was like...
I'm a dumb bitch.
Wow.
Sorry. I just apologize for the microphone one. Yeah, I'm
sorry. It's okay.
Yeah. You don't apologize. This is exactly why this thing is right here. Yeah, there's a shock absorber. I'm going to go home.
So you did Nord 9?
I was doing Nord 9, but at the same time, maybe this is why I didn't think about it. I was also doing something called Under the Dog, which was a
Kickstarter.
Yes,
a Kickstarter OVA. And that was that came first. And so I just, I didn't know like how everything kind of progressed, but I was on that for the trailer music, and then they asked if I wanted to do the actual soundtrack.
Yeah.
So that was so cool, because that was like the first one.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
I was well happy about that.
Yeah.
I've been like, you know, just fucking, for lack of a better word, fantasizing about fucking trying to do anime for
years. Yeah.
I was lucky enough to do games for a couple of years. Oh, my God. I'm so happy about that.
Yeah.
I was in college. I just finished college in London, so I was living here at the time. I had no idea what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, boom, like
now you're in anime.
Yeah.
You were composing for games while in college?
Yeah. I did, when I was doing undergrad, that's when I started doing lots of stuff, and then that developed with other games, both Japanese and
so you were busy in school.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know how I did it, because
maybe we'll get to the bottom of this while talking to you.
Yeah.
You obviously got tracking.
I'll make another five head observation.
It's just like therapy times three. Therapist times three. It's like, oh my God, everything makes sense. It's all connected, man. It's all connected, dude. So I was working throughout college as well. It just happened. I mean, I was just working, work, and just, you know,
fell over and just happened.
Most people don't. Me included, don't do anything while at college.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say don't anything.
In general.
I was like, don't dare go down that path. I'll bring out those compliments straight away, son.
Okay, yeah. So like now what I want to know actually is like how you and Gant got to know each other. Because like I kind of met you guys through that, right? I met you through Gant and whatnot. Where was the connection there?
That's a pretty simple connection. I hope you remember it.
But I have a pre-story.
Okay.
Which connects to that.
Right.
I think I might have like drunkenly mentioned this to Sydney or something potentially, but I don't think I've mentioned it to any of you. At least I don't remember mentioning it. So I actually like, when I was like going through like college and stuff, I like totally felt out of anime.
I was
not watching it. I remember when I was watching like, all the Ghibli stuff and whatnot and some shows.
Mm.
Some really important shows for me, like kind of just to get into the anime kind of fandom to begin with when I was like 14 or so, fell well out of it, just kind of went totally on the ground for a long time. And then what brought me back was doing Made in Abyss because I was like, you know, it's like one of those shows where like creatively it was the first time I felt like, oh, I'm actually doing music that really feels like me sort of thing. I feel like I'm bringing like a lot of the sort of more experimental stuff that I learned in primary school, in undergrad. Then like I did my master's in London, and then that was sort of like honed like film music craft a little
bit.
Right. So what was your degree in, sorry?
I did a Bachelor of Composition and Music Technology at West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, and then I did a Master's of Music for Screen, Composition for Screen, the Royal College of Music in London.
Oh damn.
Yeah. Sorry for dropping that.
We're cool. I can drop. Yeah. I forgot that I have a fucking MA. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, you were going on Warp for so long. I was like, oh yeah, I also have a Master's degree.
No, RCM is awesome. I mean, it really kind of like honed the craft. Mm. That's where I learned like production stuff. Yeah. And just like learned how to like produce music for film. But Whopper like focused a lot more on experimental music or new music, a lot of art music.
When you said Whopper, I thought you were talking about the Burger King Whopper.
I was on a binge just eating a bunch of Whoppers, experimenting with music.
I know. Sounds pretty accurate. Yeah. it just kind of all came together for this this project.
I
mean, God bless Kanima Citrus, man. They just gave me so much freedom. Birth to just kind of actually just kind of try some things that I didn't know I could do it, and I felt really good actually just kind of going through that process of going, I remember like that violin technique I've never like tried before and sort of thing. And I can try and like record in this giant space in Vienna can try and mimic like the size of the abyss sort of thing. Those sort of techniques that like were just introduced to me either through undergrad or postgrad.
Right.
It was just really nice.
Yeah.
What was the question?
how you and Gantman?
Sorry. There is a point to all this. I promise there is a point. Okay, so on the back of those feel goods, you know, doing a bit, I was curious, okay, how is the show doing?
Yeah.
Right.
And I would type in, you know, the...
You Googled yourself.
I Googled made the best. I was like, okay, is it, you know, how is it, you know, sort of thing. And all these YouTuber guys were starting to talk about it. Okay. I'm like, oh, okay. They're talking about it. They're liking it.
Mm.
And then you made this video about like which music, what was your favorite anime and what
I type? Think it was like one of my, the anime of the year kind of thing where I did like a run.
Anime of the year. You had like the art category and the animation category and then you had the music category.
Yeah.
And you made this like great joke like about the fact that I was Aussie.
No, because there was this one clip that got posted in the behind the scenes documentary of Made in Abyss. And of course it's like very professionally made documentary. And then there's just this one clip of Kevin going to be like, he was talking to someone and I can't remember the exact line, but he talks about, oh yeah, can he's like you refer to someone as like a mate or something like that, right?
So Dimitri was the guy I was talking to,
right?
He's just amazing. He's like the main violinist in all the Abyss stuff, he is like the bosses of bosses when it comes to unbelievable. His big dude boys wrong, so like he's like, oh yeah, I'm trying, it's good. Sorry, I don't do a good impression of him.
We don't know Dimitri, so I don't even know.
I'm more just covering my eyes. But because I don't play violin, I play flute.
Yeah.
So I checked with college friends before going over. I'd be like, is this shit? Is this fucked up? If I give this to someone in a recording studio.
Yeah.
Because obviously, remember, like when you go into a recording session, that's fucking thousands of euros or dollars, whatever it is, like a fucking hour. Like, we're talking like five figures easily in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Like, or 8 hour, some depending on how many people you're hiring. Super expensive scenario to be like, oh, the flute player wrote fucking stupid fucking violin lines. So checking with friends or mates beforehand was exactly what I did. And I was trying to be chill about it. I was I just checked with like a mate and like that. But the phrase, hey, he did not understand. He's Austrian American.
Yeah. Right.
He's like, check with what? I'm like, with a friend.
It was in the behind the scenes.
Fucking superimpose Land Down Under over that fucking clip.
Yeah, I mean, I checked with a mate, but he seemed to say that was okay.
Checked with a what?
With a friend.
Okay.
And but for some reason, it felt really cool to have like that, you know, that response from this YouTuber fucking guy. And then I started getting really curious about, okay, this lovely gentleman over here is thinking like this about, you know, maybe who else is thinking about, like, what is everyone else thinking about? Like, fucking AnaTubers were the reason I got back into anime.
Oh, shit, man.
No shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
AnaTubers doing a positive thing for someone?
Something for the anime industry?
Yo.
You guys brought me back. And
holy
then
fuck.
Once Abyss hit, we started going to conventions. And then I saw that you were going to be there. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I must... I must say hello.
Yeah,
right, right, right.
I've been enjoying the I've been enjoying the content. And I have ever since.
Yeah. No, because I remember because we were both going to Crunchyroll Expo, and I was like, oh, Kevin's going. And you know when you like, I don't know why, right? You just like bring out this aura of just like. He's a lad. He's a fucking lad. And that was extrapolated just from that one clip that's like, oh, I check with the mate. And then he goes, check with the what? And then you just see the panic being like, check with the friend.
It's equal parts resting bitch face and spastic.
And I was just like, from that one clip, I was like, he seems like a lad. Of course, we met at the first time at like the bar or something.
Right.
Fitting.
Where is a more fitting place than meeting each other? But
are you gigging?
And it was like I was like prepared to be like, are you Kevin? Oh my god, I'm like a big fan of your work. Made in the Abyss was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, Kevin comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And I like at this time, you know, Anichi was like way smaller than it is now.
Mm.
So like I'm just like a random guy who got just like invited to this anime expo. Been really excited to meet people in the industry, people who's actually worked on anime. And then Kevin taps me on the shoulder and be like, are you Gigguk? I fucking love your work. I'm like, why are you saying this to me? I should be saying this to you.
It's true. No, but that's the thing. I came from it from the exact same position. I'm just happy to be there. I'm not happy to meet people. Because of that show, I'm here.
My
first time meeting you is when you ordered too much chicken. So that was that was a bonding experience.
I was gonna say we can. Because trauma is very good. Trauma is very good bonding.
I've never been back to that chain.
Well, the first time I met you was at an izakaya in Shibuya, you were just like, "Oh, you want an oolong high?" And at first I was like, who's this bloke? And then I realized it's fucking Kevin. I was like, oh, okay.
It's like four Magnus sizes in it.
So of course, like Crunchyroll Expo, we like immediately bonded over fucking getting pissed as a British and Aussies do.
Of course.
But like, I remember you got to a point of drunkenness where you started like spewing some really interesting shit about your creative process of Made in the Abyss.
I did that last night to
you. You did that last night to me,
Where he, like, for some reason, there's like a certain drunkenness level where Kevin gets really eloquent about talking about his creative process in music. And he was talking about this one track, which was played over like a very spoilerific moment in Made in the Abyss season 1.
Yeah.
It was a very emotional moment. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about like using like juxtaposition and like techniques that he learned from like university and college. And I was just, I remember being like, I was pretty toasted. I was just like, this is really fucking interesting. I just really like, as like an anime fan, I would love to hear this when I'm sober because I'm like not remembering any of this. So like I put a mental note to ask him about it the next day when I'm sober, and so is he, so we can explain in more detail. It's really fucking interesting. So I go to Kevin. I was like, Kevin, you were talking about this track and Made in Abyss and like how you came up with that and what process you did. Like, can you like expand on that? Because that's really fucking interesting. And he just looks at me and goes, I have no idea what the fuck I said, mate.
No, he like Kevin did that to me on Friday. He went off about this one synthesizer for like 2 hours. He's like, you don't understand. When you put your finger on it, it's like 50 springs. 50 springs on your finger. And it feels amazing.
It is amazing.
It's like velvety and it feels so good. And I'm just like,
Imagine putting your finger on, like, you know, like divers, like not skin, diver skin.
like a wetsuit.
So there's I got a synth that's made out of diver wetsuit with all these different springs underneath. And you play it like a C-board. So you can, like, you play synths and stuff, but it's like a legato sort of thing. So
all right. You assume I know what a C-board is.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so imagine a piano, but with no keys, and it's just a line.
Yeah, that's a C-board, yeah.
Like, like that. Imagine doing that with a piano. Yeah.
Is that the thing that they did, like, the fucking jerk it out meme on...
What?
Okay, oh, fuck.
What the fuck are you talking about?
No, you know, it's one of the do.
No, 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 not that. What is that then? It's like, okay, imagine that, but instead of a pen, it's your finger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is a
pen. Quarter pen this.
Penkin this.
Yeah. So he was going off about that for like what felt like 2 hours. And it was really interesting, but it was exact same situation. I was like, I'm really hammered. This is really cool. You're showing me all these like YouTube videos in this like really loud bar, and I'm like having to do this.
It's like really like specific, kind of quite nuanced sound. I was like, this is a 43-minute video. Just let me scrub for a minute. Yeah.
But it's good to hear. It's like great when you're hearing someone who's like so passionate about something.
I mean, to be fair, I do. Actually fucking love it. I might like joke about it a little bit, but I don't remember how this fucking happened.
But you know, as a fellow musician, I understood majority of what you were saying. I can't imagine what it was like for Garn, right? Just like hearing all these like musicology terms and just like
have you ever heard a moose?
Something like that. Like, like,
is that something I should know?
Yeah, I don't know why I chose a moose.
I asked about like the Doom soundtrack, and you were telling me about how to compose it, he got some Russian synth, and I was like,
you were telling me.
In my head, I was like, I understand that the it being from Russia could add to the sound of it sounding more Doom-like.
Yeah.
I was just like, I mean, in my head, I'm like, does the Russia have a lot of influence on the synth being like more Doom-esque?
Doom-esque. I mean,
like, is the soundtrack of Russia just Doom? Like,
I feel like once I tired you out, I like went next victim. We were like, so let me tell you about Russian synthesizers.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know any synthesizers, but I'm open to hearing.
So the Polyvox is a Soviet era synthesizer that it's about 50 kilograms, and it has like one of the most gnarly fucking sounds. Because you got to think of, okay, the synthesizer is basically, I mean, among other things, it's voltage being put through an oscillator.
Okay,
right. So it's it's a fucking biblical sound. It is beautiful. And the way that you can shape these oscillators and then filter them through different effects and stuff makes a synthesizer's character come out. Okay. So like the different types of processing that you have, the oscillator, I mean, you can just listen to the oscillator be an oscillator. But at the same time, the way that it's processed through certain other like kind of effects and boards in a synthesizer gives it a certain unique character.
This is exactly how he sounded the other night, by the way.
I'm sober.
Very eloquent here.
But like, you know, in the same way, like you have like a guitar, right? And you have different makes of guitar. Different types of guitar, depending on how it's made, the pickups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It'll have a different characteristic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think of it like that, but electricity.
Okay.
Right.
And so this particular synthesizer that was used in the Doom soundtrack, and I would love to get one, but like they're not easy to get a hold of. It's like they are dated instruments now. Yeah. That is a dated.
So is your house just filled with just instruments and synthesizers and a bunch of other random stuff that you use?
Yeah. So my fucking, I guess, call it both a quarter life crisis and like my pandemic kind of like.
Pandemic crisis.
Yeah, right.
Depression, fucking, fuck COVID sort of like outlet was just to fill this room with just all this fucking shit to just record. And like, it helped. It helped a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I saw you tweeting about it constantly, right? So I'm like, that's the problem is that like all it took was for me to ask about this like one particular synthesizer that I really liked. All I said was, so Kevin, I heard you bought a Moog. And then he just went off for 2 hours.
Sorry, let me tell you my life story.
Yeah.
Now we always think like, what's the opposite of, you know, the horse girl? Well, apparently it's the synthesizer guy.
It's the synthesizer guy. guy.
I'm still trying to figure out why I tried to make you think about what a moose sounds like. I don't know why I picked that. See, this is the problem. It's like I'm too sober. It's for this.
I'm not making enough sense.
Yeah. There's like a little gray area where between like dysfunctional and functional. Dysfunctional. Everything's down is up.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm a bit afraid to ask after what we've just talked about, but what is your creative process? Do you have one?
Right. That's such a...
Because I'm sure you have like the answer prepared for like when you get asked that on a panel, and like I hear you ask yeah. that question on the panel, and I'm just like that is not like the Kevin that right. I know.
So so it's kind of weird because I don't like I haven't.
He's buffering. He's buffering.
He's buffering.
DLR, whatever it's called. DLR is the top of my head. My bad.
The work.
This is it. This is the process. Right now, this is the process. Fucking having some fucking stroke on camera.
This is your kid. This is
it's all good. It's all good. It's all good.
How much usable content we're actually making?
It's all cut.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
it's a 1 minute supercut.
Yeah.
He left the end. So
is it the beeps and the boops?
No. Well, yeah. So it comes from like it comes from many places.
Right.
I can't make that sound good, so I'm just going to meme it. But so let's say, for example, one way is that I've like woken up in the middle of the night. I had like some sort of fucking weird fever dream, but then I'm woken up with like some sort of melody in my head.
Yeah.
I'll write it down as like almost like a musical Morse code on like Evernote. Cause I got like Evernote and I love it.
Right. Yeah.
I'll do like a little moment. It's like B dash dash is like B for two beats. So I'll write like a tempo and maybe like tempo.
You wake up thinking about melodies?
Sometimes. Wow. But then the problem is I'll like write it down and be like, oh man, it's fucking good. I'm gonna go back to sleep now. I'm gonna wake up nice and early after I've had a nice rest and you know, just like get to work and I wake up and I'm like, oh, this means fucking nothing to me. So I have to like reinterpret what I like wrote.
Memento. Like, because
I used to do that as well. Yeah. But now when I do it, I just sing into my phone. So the next morning I wake up and I'm just like, it's just like audio of me just like, just like really quietly at like 3 a.m. Aki must think I'm fucking psychotic because I'm just singing to myself at 3 a.m. But it helps.
Another way that I'd like start a piece of music would be like literally just try and like find a cool sound or a cool like
right.
Yeah, whether it be like therapy synthesizers that I decided to get.
Right. Which synthesizer should I use today?
You know, just learning up Logic Pro and just being like, let's fuck around and just see what happens. And that's a little cheeky little piano sometimes. It's nice. And
stop playing stuff.
Yeah, it's just like, well, most of it's shit, but then eventually like, you get something that's like, okay, it's not too shit that I couldn't come back and like refine it later.
It might
be a little bit of a riff sometimes, stuff like that. But so like, let's take the Rising of the Shield Hero main theme. At the start, it's just like sad piano, boom, dun. It's like sad piano.
Yeah.
But then you have this violin coming in, going bit a 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 bit.
Yeah,
yeah. Kind of. It rises up.
Yeah.
It's the Mario theme.
I was like, I don't remember that in the Rise of the Shield Hero.
I would be very out of work.
I've come with this.
Nintendo lawyers knocking at your door.
I was trying to do like the bottom spur. What's the melody version of that? Yes, that really not. Love, I'm sorry, people. I'm very sorry.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm so bad.
I'm too sober for this.
I didn't come prepared. Like my blood alcohol is not of par. So the rest of the shield here.
Yes.
So the kind of starts. That was where that. So I would start with that and try and work around that.
Right.
So, I guess you could think of it as like, you know, you create like one little line and then you're creating another little line that kind of connects to that.
Mm.
And so it kind of just slowly becomes like a sort of bit more of a complicated kind of beast.
Becomes like patchwork type of thing, right? Yeah.
And then like you kind of like go back to like kind of fill in and refine.
Damn.
Right. So like maybe I'll have like a structure of something or I have like, you know, most of a structure of something to work with. And then I'll just kind of sit back and be like, okay, what sucks? What needs to be changed? And just kind of refine. Mm. Almost like something like trench fishing.
What's it's that?
Like, it's where they throw the net. Yeah, where it's like a net. It's like, and they kind of drag the seabed, like the seabed, and they start to pick up fish like that. Way. It's like a filter process where you drench fishing.
That was the loudest like 5 seconds of silence ever on the show.
that was the loudest silence I've ever heard in my life.
I was trying to process.
I was trying to say dredge, but then I thought of like the Mariana Trench.
Yeah, I was like.
Welcome to the fucking nightmare. That is my head.
Dredge fishing.
Yeah, dredge fishing. Right, but like you think of that as like, but you're just like going through, you're listening, I don't know what this action is anymore. And then you're just kind of refining until you kind of can't find any more like flaws, so to speak.
Right.
Or you run out of time, but
right.
Yeah.
Do you kind of show those like unfinished or like, you know, combed through pieces to like other people to get like a second opinion? Or do you kind of just all the time?
There's like a few kind of core people where I'll be like, hey, so
Just tell me it real.
What's
the track and you wrote like, and you're just like, this one's the banger. This one's a fucking banger. And I can't wait to hear this.
This is the one that will explode my career.
Yeah. No, I don't think like that. Okay. What I normally like more, what I gravitate more in terms of like being confident about a track is kind of the process of it.
Yeah.
I use an example that I can't tell you like now, but like last night, but, like let's take like Made in Abyss season 1 for example.
Right.
There's a track that I mentioned earlier called Swings and Roundabouts, and it involves a really cool sort of arpeggio style playing, a playing technique called arpeggiation on a violin. So normally when you play a violin, and I'm sorry, any violinists out there about to fucking hate me because I'm gonna explain what a violin does. Like as a flautist, and it's gonna suck. But if you think of it, because normally you see a violin, they play one or two strings at the time, and then they normally like change their fingers like that. One of the techniques that I really enjoyed was where they put fingers in all four strings and then just kind of bow up and down on all four strings and almost make like a chord. So it's, well, if you do like that, it doesn't do much, but you go 1, 2, 3, 4, back 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's like this kind of cool kind of chord sort of thing. And you can play it quite, they play it very, very fast because they're fucking good musicians. But then you can change that all the time. So you're always like, and you're kind of changing chords all the time. And you can make like these really cool, like, because it's a very shimmery sort of texture. But I did that on one violin, and then I had, In Abyss season 1, we had 3 violins, 3 viola, 2 celli, and 1 bass. And they're all of them playing like solo parts. So it's like 9 solos together.
Right.
They're all playing these different chords, like arpeggiated chords together. And it's sort of making this bit of this sort of cacophony of like sounds and stuff. So like doing those sorts of things makes me feel good about that track. It's like, oh, I got to explore this kind of crazy thing. Oh, I got to like kind of make this. Exactly. It's like, oh, I got to like kind of explore that, and it didn't fucking fail.
And it sounds good.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Yeah, and that's and I like the. I like the noise.
This is so alien to me that you're explaining all this stuff and it literally just sounds like another world. Like it doesn't sound like a thing that I can even comprehend. Right. But I appreciate it because, you know, I know you're making sense.
Yeah.
It's just like, to me, I have like such engineering and math brain.
The
way I approach everything, and like it's very like, okay, I just do it. I do. There's nothing that's like just a gut feeling.
Right. There's no experimentation.
I mean, there needs to be a part of that in this process as well. Because I mean, experience means that you can execute these ideas.
True.
I've had like crazy fucking ideas I have no idea how to do and I still don't.
I was gonna ask, you said something earlier and I was like, how do you convince, so you, like you said, mentioned that you're in like a chapel or something and you're recording like an orchestra or something,
right?
How do you go like, hey higher ups, I have this idea. I'd like to rent out a church somewhere in Austria. Could we ship and get a bunch of violinists and all the people there? It might work out. Let's just see how it goes. By the way, it's $100,000.
The might part is definitely not something that I translate.
You're like, it's definitely
going to work.
I mean, first off, thankfully, there's trust. So like that.
You've proven that
a little bit of trust.
Yeah.
But so obviously like when you start a project, you're given a budget. And, you know, the budget, you know, sometimes you can like kind of stretch it a little bit and, you know, you can do some little bit of black magic just to get some deals and stuff.
It's budget, like, this might sound stupid. It's budget and then you get your pay separate, right? That's like completely.
There's a composer's fee and then there's a budget.
Right, right, okay. Right, makes sense.
Production fee.
Okay, make sure.
Pretty standard. But so when we were able to kind of like explore this idea using Maiden as an example, like, yeah, we're trying to explore this like this massive studio called the Synchron Stage in Vienna, which I think it fits like 135 musicians. It's a massive room.
Yeah,
like, I'm pretty sure it's like a football field, if not slightly more. Like, it is
I understand big. That metric.
Yeah,
a football. Yeah. Oh no, like, there we go.
And it's got a really unique sound profile, and so you can stick like a really small amount of musicians in there, and it will sound fucking huge because they put all these microphones around. So you get all these ambient microphones. They stick them like fucking 30 feet up in the air and stuff, and you have like what they're called outriggers, and you got like everything, man. You got all this sound to play with.
Is that not just like a nightmare to have to go through all those different like angles of sound?
Nah, it's a pleasure, mate.
To me, you're saying that to me, and I'm like, holy shit, the setup required.
Kevin gets off on that. Yeah, like, yeah.
I'm raging hard on front now. Like,
just setting up like four mics for this fucking podcast gives me an aneurysm.
Like, he sees a mic 30 feet up in the air, he's just bricked up. He's like, damn, that's going to sound so good.
These mics got me acting up, man.
So you have absolute permission to like slit my throat if I don't actually utilize a space like that. Like, you'd be really nuts to.
Yeah.
But no, so the space is phenomenal. Mm. And then we get a small amount of musicians because like, we decided like, okay, small amount of characters in the film, in the show, a small amount of musicians to kind of like mimic that kind of party size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just having like, yeah, like three solo violinists, three solo viola, two solo cello, one solo bass, but then them all kind of doing their own thing. But because the space is so good and so clean, you can have all these voices like really nice if you orchestrate correctly.
Right.
You can, so it's like if you balance your textures correctly and all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
You can have like a really rich sound with a small amount of people and it can sound phenomenal.
Right. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's really fun.
You're performing magic.
Literally. Yeah.
This means you just said like so many words that I'm like, I get it.
I'm like, damn, man. Say that again.
I appreciate it. Not at all. But I mean, sometimes like just the basic stuff, like even just doing the base, like what it is like kind of, let's call it simple, like refined simple sort of ideas is really, really fun. One of the other tracks that's in Abyss Season 1 called Recapitulation. What's that? Something in Recapitulation, sorry. But I should probably remember my own tracks. it just involves the nine strings just playing just notes. And all they're doing is changing the duration of the bow hand in order to get shorter or longer notes. So they have like three different levels of length of note.
But it's the same note.
It's the same note. I mean, we change up the chords sometimes, but it is quite minimalistic in that particular track.
Right.
So basically, if you change the texture in that room, because you have something called... I should probably remember the damn thing from... what's it called?
You'll remember it.
All good, man. All good.
It's like early reflections. I think it's called early reflections.
Okay.
Right.
The early reflections of the sound. Mm. So like the sound that kind of like, because sound's flying everywhere in the room.
Right.
This is one thing I do understand. Yeah.
Sound goes everywhere and obviously it bounces off certain points and then comes back to the microphone.
Mm. Yeah.
Those early reflections in that room are really, really cool.
Right.
And they have a lot of character because it's almost like an echo effect or a chorus effect.
Mm.
And so, for example, if I recorded your voice in there, but I didn't use like the mic that's in front of you, but I used the mics that caught like the first reflections of you just behind you or in front of you or something like that, it would almost sound like there's like 10 of you.
Right, really cool
chorus effect. It's quite unique to that. I mean,
because it's kind of like spread out and bounced around a little bit, right?
Just because of the quality of the wood in the room and stuff. Yeah, like that, things change, and so it is like a really good room.
So is this place like famous? Because I can't imagine. Okay, you're gonna record a soundtrack. You want like a certain sound profile for like Made in the Best, like because this place seems like it was tailor-made for a series like Made in Abyss, set in caverns and wide open spaces.
Yeah.
How do you like go about finding the perfect recording spot or the perfect recording space?
The correct recording spot, yeah.
Yeah, the correct.
Yeah. So for Abyss, it was that one. I think because Rising of the Shield Hero, we recorded in Boston with a rock orchestra. And they specified in rock orchestra. So the players did live performances at the time. With a full live band. I think they did some Final Fantasy stuff, among other Square Enix projects, among other things as well.
Right.
So they like kind of specialized in that kind of quite cool kind of attitude orchestra with rock, which is what we wanted to achieve for Shield Hero.
Right.
Tower of God, obviously, I mean, it's in the name as well. It has like a slightly biblical sort of sensibility about it. And we found this hall in the Czech Republic called the Dvořák Hall. So it's this beautiful old hall. It was built, I think, in the name of Dvořák. So he's like a very, very, very famous composer of romantic, late romantic music, I should say. But so this hall was designed either for him or by him or around him. So sorry about not being specific about it, but it is a beautiful concert hall. It is ancient. It has this beautiful, lush sort of like reverb tail and stuff. Yeah. It is fucking pretty to like listen to, and it's a performance hall, but they also do recording there.
Yeah,
and we recorded string orchestra there for Tower of God because it had this sort of almost cathedral-esque sort of sensibility, which worked great for certain aspects of the Tower of God soundtrack.
Right,
of,
like, right.
Concepts.
Right,
right.
So this one hall, it was. They had a very specific sound that, say, a normal cathedral wouldn't.
I'm sure a normal cathedral would, but that's when practicality comes into it. So you've got to make sure at the end of the day that, you know, again, you got to fit within certain budgets and stuff like that. I mean, that's part of like the business skills part of it, which
I imagine you have these grandiose ideas and this concept that you have, and there's a guy there that is like, I am here to scale you back down. Yeah.
I'm here to make sure that you keep your so life. You're pushing the envelope a little bit, aren't you?
Like I want to record on the moon because it's a space opera. I'm like, you know,
yeah.
No, there's no sound in space.
We're getting real experimental.
We're gonna build a cathedral in space.
Yeah. Apparently, a dying black hole or like a black hole is like the loudest sound ever, but you can't hear it.
I believe
that. Yeah. I believe that.
Probably.
Yeah. The moon would be nice, but I don't think I'm gonna.
You're not gonna make a whole lot of progress there.
No.
The fact about the dying black hole being the loudest thing.
No, I think they did manage to record it. So, I think it must be the loudest sound because it's a black hole consuming stars. But
yeah,
they managed to record the sound of it, I think, recently, and it's like this eerie fucking it's atoms being crushed into nothing.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, yeah,
interesting bit of.
We're not going to the moon.
Second loudest is a Modern Warfare 2 lobby.
Exactly.
So like going like I guess moving from Made in Abyss, one thing I've noticed is that you always try to do something new with like every new project that you take on. I guess that's why you put a lot of experimental stuff into Made in Abyss. And I feel like Tower of God, right? That's just like dubstep, which is like so far removed from what you were doing in Made in Abyss. Like how did that come about?
Like did you have to listen to like a lot of dubstep to like study it, or did they tell you,
or was that your decision to be like, I'm gonna put a bunch of fucking dubstep?
No,
in
it's because
right
I used to go to a lot of fucking raves.
I just feel like making a rave.
No. Like one of the people I worked with. Pre-story again, but So Perth has like a massive drum and bass scene.
We're really getting the backstory.
Well, Pendulum from there, for example.
Of course.
It has a great scene. So when I went to Whopper, I got introduced because I was like, oh, I love video game music and that's it sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then one of my really, really close best friends that I still, you know, we're still really, really close today.
Yeah.
So we've known each other it's getting on 13 years now.
Yeah.
But he used to be like, oh, well, we're going to this fucking, you know, we're going to like this like hotel bar to go to a rave and I've got a track and one of the DJs is playing one of my drum and bass tracks.
Mm.
Come. And then, yeah, let's do a bunch of fucking like vodka cruises and whatnot, and just dance like a fucking energizer bunny on the fucking floor, like for like 3 or 4 hours, and it'd be great. And so I kind of kept that. And when I moved here, obviously, that, you know, this big kind of EDM.
Yeah, I just like to imagine you at like DEF CON or something, and you're just standing there like they don't know I'm a flautist. He's just like standing there.
I'm very good at the world's shittiest shuffle. Yeah. You know, like, but
I would pay to see that.
Yeah, no, that culture of dance music, and especially
like hardcore music.
Yeah, well, yeah. Either liquid drum and bass or dark drum and bass fucking just kept with me.
Mm.
Yeah. So like if you think about like kind of those elements where it's either like very, very fluid sort of synthesizers, or that it can be like it, like there is some fucking hardcore like music. Like right. In that genre,
mm,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you've like been to like a, there's so many examples, but you know, if you hear like a, I can't even think of like, I remember going to a couple of gigs in either South or East London when I was living here,
yeah,
and the fucking bass that comes out of some of these like venues,
oh, yeah,
man,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah.
like
holy
speakers,
fuck.
Like. I went to this warehouse gig once. I can't remember where because it's been so long ago by now. But like, I remember like just walls and walls of speakers for hundreds of meters. And then because it's like a 3-story warehouse, they've got speakers going up.
Yeah.
Fucking bass that comes out of those mixes. When you're on the dance floor, you know, obviously you had a couple of the, you know, vodka tonics or something like that. Man, you just like, it's wetting. It's
yeah,
so
you feel every atom in your body just like shake.
Yeah.
Especially the bass. Like it's a fucking physical reaction. It's biblical, man. It's so good.
Yeah.
And so like,
you know, the bass is good when you don't hear it, you just feel it.
You do. Yeah. Feel it.
That's such a good adjective. Yeah. Biblical. I'm gonna use that more. More often.
It's resonating your chest. Cube. It's really good. It feels awesome. And it sounds great as well. Until you start bleeding.
Yeah. This is chicken sandwich. Biblical. Biblical. Fucking biblical, mate.
It's so good that Jesus had to get involved.
It is a little spiritual. But yeah, so that culture and that feeling, still is with me, even though I write a lot of orchestral music as well.
When it came to
Tower of God, if you look at the manga, because manga, unlike manga, is it's colorized.
Yeah.
So if you look at the color palette for Tower of God in the manga, it's actually very minimalist. There's normally like 3 or 4 like very big bold colors on a panel, and then you go back and you see these really interesting, like some of the characters are sometimes just silhouettes against like a huge beautiful background,
right
in front of a giant creature or something like that. So there's a as a composer, it's like kind of a bit of a wet dream. It's really good. If you think about taking really bold colors that are contrasting and trying to put them together in a musical sense.
Yeah.
Like you can split it into, let's say, a frequency range. You can go high, mid, low.
Yeah.
So if you have, I did a theme for one of the characters called Rachel.
Yeah.
And her theme is literally just harp. So there's harp in the middle. There's like dial-up style tones on top. And then just this bass comes in to just kind of punch you in the face, essentially.
Right.
In the chest cavity. And so like that sort of like dubstep with harp, for example, like, you know, how can we find like interesting combinations that still kind of relate back to this idea of frequency spectrums being kind of split up to represent very minimalist but maximalist style coloring in the panels.
That sort of thing.
So like, you know, you have like this kind of pretty harp and all of a
sudden
welcome. But like, you know, these sorts of like also radical changes in texture as well.
Yeah.
Like that suits Tower of God in my mind, at least.
No, it definitely did.
Like,
yeah.
When you handed it to them and you're like, here it is. They were like, whoa.
Well, it was kind of interesting because we did essentially what you could call almost like a concept album. We did like 13 tracks. We were like, we're going to put together 13 contrasting tracks to
That's
present.
Quite a lot of tracks.
It was a big investment.
Yeah.
But like we did like the first 13 tracks as like sort of a proof of concept, saying like, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to do it. We need this style of choir and, you know, this harp and this dubstep idea. And we want to, you know, punch people in the face with like beats and shit. And they were all for it. Which again, just fucking lucky. And thank you to them for like actually just being like
being cool with it.
We're cool. Yeah.
I feel like when you explain stuff in music, I'm like, yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah.
I have achieved the impossible.
Yeah, I feel like I'm. If I was the exec, I'd be like, you sound like you know what you're saying. I'll believe you.
You mentioned the word biblical. Yeah. That's all I need to know.
He said biblical, minimalist, and then maximalist. Yeah. Within like 1 second, I was like, that sounds like you know what's up.
So look into my eyes. Not a regular.
I just like, I'm trying to, I'm like, yeah, okay. Harps go with, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you also need to, you know, execute the concept.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So like, you know, because obviously everything's done kind of in a computer, so to speak, until you go to the recording process as well.
Yeah.
So you're also showing a demo. You're not showing like the full realized sort of thing. So then you've got to potentially risk, you know, going and finding the right musician, finding the right space within the right budget, of course, as well.
Are you the one handling all of this? Is the...
Oh, I mean, it's not like I've got sort of the music supervisor, the music director.
That we work
with every day. So.
Right.
So if you need someone to play the harp, right? You need someone to record it. You're like, I know a guy. You're like, please find me a harp person.
Well, this is the lucky part about going to a music college. Because
you know everyone.
You get to know a bunch of musicians. Right.
So like a couple of the composer friends that I went to Whopper with. And sorry, I'm going to come back to it. But like, you know, it's all fucking... It's all connected, man. It's all connected.
My man's got Dimitri on speed dial. Yeah. It's like, hey, yo. I know the guy.
No. Messages, happy birthday.
He knows a mate.
Yeah, he knows a mate.
he's a beautiful boy.
Yeah.
Beautiful man. She's saying, but, yeah, no. So, like, for example, like, when I went to undergrad in Whopper, like, I had a couple of friends and stuff that, like, I started working with on Tower of God. So, you know, Matt McLean, Feeding Ear is his name, and we did some drum bass stuff for Tower of God.
That was
really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then I knew some musicians because I went to the RCM here in London.
Right.
And like those student musicians are bloody good.
Yeah.
And, you know, student musicians of the RCM become, you know, they have a very, very good chance of becoming working musicians.
Yeah.
Right.
You'd hope so. Right.
There is a really, like, they are beautiful musicians, and because you're just basically breaking bread with these guys for 2, 3, 4 years.
You are
going to the RCM bar and you're getting hammered with these guys all the time, and so, you know, you have like this connection, because, you know, in the same way that we kind of, you know, broke a little bread over over about 600 gin tonics, you know. But you do the same with like the musician stuff. They're good friends, but they also come to work.
So it sounds like every aspect of the entertainment industry. You can be good at what you do, but also you need to go out and talk to people.
Exactly.
It's super important. And so when it came to certain projects like this, like Tower God, like, Valeria was the harp player, and she does not only classical harp, but she also does improv harp. So I could just give her, like, you know, I could almost give him some, you know, really piece of shit fucking like sheet music where I was like, I've done my best to like make it so that it doesn't look like an absolute insult, but feel free to like just interpret this in a non-shitty way.
Right.
I was going to ask you about this. So it's like, you're mentioning that you're the one writing the sheet music, roughly. Yeah. How do you come across the knowledge of every single instrument you want to use?
Pain and suffering.
Because obviously, if you're a violinist, you do violin. You're very good at it.
Yeah.
But like, you're like, I need to know this Russian synth. Also, can I find the harp? And I need to write that. Like, this sounds like an overload of knowledge that you have to acquire, or have a rough understanding of almost everything.
So when you're orchestrating for a larger ensemble, so harp is a very, very specific and very unique instrument.
It
works on a pedaling system, which I understand the concept of, but don't know how to like achieve.
Right.
So what I would say is that you're kind of working up your base knowledge of certain things.
Right.
Obviously, like when I write woodwind sectionals, it's a lot kind of, let's call it more natural.
Yeah, because you understand that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I understand that if I do something quite fucky, that there's going to be a will or a way to kind of get it done.
Yeah.
And that's why I hear like quite a few flute passages and whatever. So, because you hear a lot of flute jumping up and down and up and down and up and down, because like,
it's like it's just your comfort instrument, right? It's just like.
But then when it comes to, say, Dimitri, the violinist, because he is such a fucking boss, I can do like what would normally be insultingly stupid shit, but he'd be like, okay, let's go. And he just fucking.
Yeah.
I can do this, I can do that. And then he's fucking like, does all these different permutations of it, just do a bunch of takes and just cut them together. And it just sounds fucking awesome.
Mm.
Yeah. And I just sat there like, oh shit, it actually worked.
Yeah.
And then like, so it's literally like fuckload of trial and error.
I was going to say, it must be a long journey.
Couple of risks, but then also, like I did learn orchestration. Which is basically just going through, going through every instrument and just being like, what does and does not work? And you just build it up. So flute, but then there's alto flute, bass flute, and then bass flute has certain characteristics in which, you know, if you go too high on the bass flute, it's going to start doing overtones.
Right.
The alto flute and the flute or the piccolo won't do in the same way.
Would you say there's always a concern then when you're like, I don't want this guy to think I'm a fucking idiot for writing this and then handing it to a professional?
That's why I like giving a chill atmosphere in the studio.
Okay.
For example, that's why if you see in that
that's when you start to call people mates.
It's like you want to bring your A game. So you come with the best possible job that you could have done.
Yeah.
You've done as much research as possible on the instrument.
It's
I mean, because that's why I gained a lot of weight in pandemic. So I was working, but I couldn't do anything to kind of get rid of the stress. Because I need to do this, I need to do that. And like the Star Wars thing, like, you know, you want to make sure that is right.
Of course.
You want to bring the best fucking sheet music. You want it to be beautifully typeset. You want that to be the best looking music you've ever written.
Right.
Page, and you want the musicians to be happy because you want the project to go really, really well. Thankfully it did. But you bring your A game and then you give the musician enough adequate scope if there is a mistake.
Yeah.
Or you get yourself, you know what it is? It's almost like you're refining the level of potential mistake down to where there's you're in a sphere of safety.
And then
within that, if there's a mistake, if there's something like that, that dynamic doesn't work. That doesn't work. Blah, blah, blah.
Tell you? They'll be like, this part isn't really doable. Or like, let's just try.
They should tell you. And that's why it's good to be like, hey, just so you know, if there is anything wrong, tell me. I don't mind.
Yeah.
I guess. But if it's. But that is literally the conversation. You have that conversation all the time.
And
Because you there are people that, you know, it's like, okay, we'll go for a take now. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Be like that. That's fine. But I guess maybe my style, my style right now, at least, is like, I'm just happy to be here and I want to make
this. I'm just a mate.
I'm just a mate.
I haven't composed anything. But they keep rehiring.
Just tell me if I'm being a dickhead. Just tell me.
We're going to sit down. We're just going to play it through. If there's any questions, I've done my best to make sure that you guys have a good time. And if you do a good time, I feel like you just, because I was explaining to you last night as well. There's a couple of thoughts of school about how many takes you should do.
Right.
And, in certain countries, there'll be one, two or three or four takes that you'll do do a run through. And then they'll be like, okay, we're done.
Right.
And then there's other times where there's other types of composers where you'll basically do multiple takes, even what would be considered potentially unnecessary takes, just to get different kind of permutations and certain phrases like that, so you can cut together and kind of do different things. So I'm in that second part.
I was
right
gonna
now,
say
right, is, right.
I'm
you
in
seem
the second
like
part,
you are.
Which is really not economical, but at the same time there have been there's been countless times where I've been able to basically create a really cool sort of almost a combination or amalgamation. What am I trying
amalgamation.
To say?
Yeah, amalgamation. Amalgamation.
Of different takes. That's where bar 34, beat 4, the cello kind of slipped a little bit on that one note.
Right.
And it sounds a little fucked up, but let's cut that in because I like the fucked upness.
And then
go back to this other take, which is a bit more clean, something like that. And then let's bring in this sort of thing.
The more you're telling me about it, the more stressed out I'm getting. Because if you have, you said you had three of each instrument earlier. What if one guy's just sick, doesn't turn up? Or
That's not a thing.
Not a thing?
No, it shouldn't be.
what if someone's they got to fly over, the visa gets delayed or something, and it's like, oh crap, we need to find another guy. This sounds like I'm getting stressed out. I'm messing all these moving parts.
If it makes you feel better, they're already there.
Okay, they're already
there. These guys do that day in and that day.
Put it this way,
if there was someone that was unable to come in because they were sick or whatever, the next person's just there.
Okay,
right.
Just wondering about how this whole process.
So in that case, you're hiring maybe not just a room, but there'll be what's called a fixer, an orchestral fixer.
Who will help get everything.
Who is they organize everything. Because you don't know everyone. You really don't.
Right.
So you're coming into a situation where you're hiring a service. You're hiring the studio, normally more times than none, I've seen that the studio and the like musician hiring service are one and the same. They come hand in hand. If you're hiring the studio, have you got musicians? No. Okay, use the person that fixes all our
That makes sense.
And then they'll say, okay, well, we need X amount of yay, and we need X amount of woodwind this and that. And then let's say, you know, someone doesn't rock up, they just make a phone call, and I've seen it happen. Like it's like, something didn't happen. Can you come in? Yep, great. See you in 10 minutes. Awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
And
wow.
You just kind of like, you can tailor the session. Unless there's a request for them to use their own conductor, I always get up my own stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
That way you have a lot more control. I'm a bit control freaky, so.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure we all.
I figured that.
Of course.
We all appreciate being very, very anal about control.
Yeah.
But just like, let's say, for example, like you're missing a cello. I'm just using an example. But, say the cello, you know, cellist falls down and, you know,
explodes.
about that is less.
You're about to say some real shit.
I could feel something that was coming out there.
I was like, let's not go there. Sorry, microphone. Let's say like Chalice is suddenly, just, you know, explodes.
Just explodes.
Just like Thanos snaps out.
Yeah.
That was a very good snap.
Like that. That was a firm snap.
Ah, do you know why? Conducting. So you gotta go 1, 2, 3. Oh,
well, then why were you shocked by your own snap?
I can conduct.
I have the power.
This entire episode is going to invest tangent. Yeah.
Honestly.
You got some whoppers. Yeah. What was I saying?
The cellist explodes.
Conductor exploding.
Let's say, okay, let's quickly switch over to like a different... let's switch over to like just the violin options. And viola only track for like 10 minutes. Okay, let's record that. Great. Finish that. Welcome back, cellist. Let's go back to that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Just have to keep like working through it.
Yeah.
You work in tandem with what's called a session producer, which is basically someone in the booth. If it's not you, like the composer can produce their own session if they are hiring a conductor to conduct. If you've decided to conduct yourself, you work in tandem with a producer or maybe two producers in the booth saying, yep, we've got that take. No, don't be a psychopath about that. Move on, please, sort of thing. You can get in your own head, especially if you conduct someone. Well, I remember you saying, like, have we got it? Like in a video when you were talking about how you have to, I think you were on scene, like it's like the Boys Club or something like that. Yeah. And you were talking about how you're doing takes of or interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're like, have we got it? Do we need to go again? And you have that sort of what would be the word? Nervousness about, okay, do we actually have the content? Do we not have the content? Do we need to go again?
Mm.
And that...
But it's important.
But if you're filming it and you're also, you know, in the shot,
then
you've got to go back. You've got to have that in mind. But having someone behind the camera, or in this case, in the recording booth, saying, no, we got it. It's chill. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That kind of moves the grease.
It's like nice reinforcement.
It's like... I guess they should, but like the cameraman, he's like getting the shot, but he doesn't necessarily give a shit if it doesn't look great. Sometimes it depends. Like,
also, I would avoid that.
Yeah.
I would recommend
that. And it's also sometimes they don't know what kind of shot that you want.
Yeah.
You know, as like normally there's with a director,
they don't have as much investment as like, say, someone you hire to be invested. Like,
Well, I mean, if you're hiring a session producer, they should.
Right. So you're hiring someone who's like, his job is to be as invested as you. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But obviously not everyone will be.
Because otherwise he's just a guy at the booth.
Right.
I do see where you're coming from now. So there are times when someone is just saying, okay, have we got the standard.
They'll be like,
we got it. Yeah.
Right.
And then you go back and you're like, you didn't have it.
But then that would be hopefully where you could, that would maybe where experience kicks in and you say, no, we're going to go again.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you kind of drive the train.
Like, right.
People are really supporting you. People are there doing their job, but between you and maybe like the music supervisor or something like that, you guys are driving that train.
Yeah.
So you've got to be like on it. And then this is where it's not just a physical job. It's also super mental.
Yeah.
Because you've got to focus on, not only if you're especially conducting, you've got the physicality of making sure, okay, cue that person in, keep on going like that.
Yeah.
You come in, beat three, blah, 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 blah. You know, so you're cueing people, even though you can do it. But, you know, through the physical act of conducting, it's not just about keeping tempo, which, to be fair, everyone's got a click in their ear, so it doesn't really matter too much. But what it's about is coaxing more performance out of it.
Yeah.
Give me more.
Like you're basically just like micromanaging everyone, right?
Hopefully in like in a positive way.
Right.
But it's like, for example, if I'm going like this to you, I'm like, okay, sing. And then, okay, on that last one, then it's like, sing more.
Yeah.
Right.
So like,
do it again.
sounds a bit constipated, but at the same time, it's like, okay, that should hopefully coax a little bit more. You know, you might push a little harder. So if you're doing that at the same time, you're also listening to everyone else in your headphones or in your room, making sure that everyone else is playing at the same time.
Yeah.
So you're doing that over and over again for 9 hours a day.
Yeah. So you take everything you just described. How many more layers of difficulty has been added on with COVID?
I was going to ask this.
And having to do things remotely. That sounds like a nightmare in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason that if you see me like in the room, I'm like a sweaty mess because it is like super intensive.
Mm.
Right.
In the COVID times, it's been interesting because depending on where you are, it's actually a little more convenient in terms of the time difference because obviously Australia's like so far in front of everywhere. So if you're recording in America, it's quite nice because you know it's sort of like an early morning thing. And I became a bit of an early riser during COVID, at least for a time until suddenly was very not an early riser. But in Europe, it's kind of interesting. We did a lot of recording in Prague, some Budapest
during the pandemic.
And for an upcoming project, we did a little recording in America as well.
Right.
But normally for Europe, it's normally like an Australian nighttime sort of recording. You kind of sit down at like 7-8 o'clock at night, and then you do 6-7 hours. So you kind of finish like 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
So you're on call.
Yeah,
with people who are just in a big hall.
Yeah. So they basically just stream the audio on Audio Movers and Zoom.
Wow.
Yeah, it's actually, to be honest, like, it's actually not bad.
Really?
But what if it like lags halfway through like a recording,
that.
Right?
Yeah. Because like fucking classic Australian internet just crashes. Like,
yeah. I was about to say, I'm like, it must be shit.
Yeah, it's like, because
Kevin's connecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, why is our conductor in like 480p? Like, I can barely see him. Like,
no, at that point, you're not conducting, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That was what was really nice about like going back to Sydney for a couple of projects. Going to Sydney for a couple of projects. Because Melbourne Sydney is like an hour and a half on the plane and stuff. And that's pretty cool. But to finally get back to conducting for Star Wars was really, really cool. That was the first time I'd done it. I forgot the, like, because the muscles just go away.
To conduct?
Because try doing this for like 9 hours.
Right.
Yeah. It's very, like, just the right
just
arm.
Just your right arm. You're like Quagmire. Like.
It's like, well, what's up with your arm? I'm a conductor. Like, I swear I'm a conductor.
We were talking about carpal tunnel and Jump King before, it's like that, but for your entire arm.
It's fine, God. He's left-handed, so they balance.
It balances out.
Oh, my God.
Kevin just post-pandemic. It's just arms are huge and nothing
perfectly
else.
Perfectly balanced. All things should be. Nah, it's like I forgot how like physically intensive it was. So I was just sat there, like, because what you're normally meant to do is like maybe be a little bit reserved in like moving your arms and stuff.
You can't help
but you're getting into it, like, fucking stop, let's just fucking go.
Yeah, sort
of thing. And then all of a sudden you're moving your entire body doing like Zumba for quite a few hours.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a little interesting.
Sounds really intense. Yeah. So like, so speaking of,
I have nothing of value to say.
Spence literally talked for an hour and a half. And it's like, that was all just bants, bro. Like,
literally just talking out of my ass. Oh, that was real.
Literally talking to like an anime composer for some of the biggest shows in like the past few years. I literally have nothing of value to say.
Yes.
So Star Wars.
Yeah.
How was that? Like,
really cool.
How was it when like the news came in to be like, can you compose a piece of like music for Star Wars media? Because I'm assuming like,
well, it's a great honor. Like, you know, obviously it has the history of history. And just to be able to kind of obviously, so Star Wars Visions is an animated series for based in the universe of Star Wars, and I did one of those episodes. So it's nine episodes. Yeah. I did the episode 4 called Village Bride.
Right.
And what I really liked about it is that Star Wars Visions, our episode explored like some really cool like spiritual and biblical stuff.
I was waiting for that word. Yeah. I was like, where is it? Where is it?
I got it explores some really nice concepts with the Force. Which was just, I mean, I grew up watching that.
Yeah.
I watched the original trilogy with my dad, and then my dad and I watched the prequels, and then I did watch the sequels as well, of course. Mm-hmm. But it was really nice to sort of have like one hand in like sort of that aesthetic world. At the same time, we're exploring certain like spiritual aspects, especially considering like the backdrop is very like sort of Kyoto-esque. So like to have like the ability to use like traditional Japanese instruments. So we use sho, we use koto, we use shakuhachi, and we did shinobue as well. And so we recorded those in Tokyo, recorded orchestra in Sydney, put them all together, but to especially the show is a
which one is that?
Show is the mouth organ. I'm very very oversimplifying it to say that.
I've never heard of this.
When Kevin said it's a mouth organ, I was this close to being like, no, it's not.
So you blow into a small, like a giant amount, sort of like giant amount. Thanks, Kevin.
Giant amount. A large
amount of bamboo pipes.
You've definitely seen it before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's part of temple culture a lot.
Right.
I mean, you would have heard it. You would have absolutely heard it. Yeah. But it's like 12 to 14 sort of individual little pipes.
Right.
Blow into it. You can blow in and like blow in and out.
Right.
To create sort of a very, very complex.
Yeah, this thing. Have you seen this thing?
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have seen this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very complex, very beautiful sort of cluster of notes that create a very, very dense, very specific chord. And all these chords have very, very, very special meaning. So first off, obviously, you know, as an Australian, I really, really wanted to be very careful about that. And, you know, there's been, there's always a bit of an attitude in Australia when it comes to using Australia's indigenous instruments, which is that you don't want to fuck this up. You don't want to be that person that has really disrespected a very, very important and very sacred instrument.
Yeah.
And so that mentality I've carried, like I've been lucky enough to use like sort of Australian instruments in the past, and it's always been in very explicit collaboration with First Nations people using those instruments, because I'm not going to use that instrument on my own.
I feel
like I have the I can't do that. And so even though I am Australian, I want to make sure that when it comes to Japan's instruments, it's the exact same approach. Very, very like calculated in a good way, like sort of, you know, talk to the musician, saying what is okay, what isn't okay, what are you happy with, are you not happy with, what is natural, what is unnatural, those sorts of things. What do you have with? Thankfully, like the musician, especially the show player, is phenomenal and was very, very, very open to just sort of discussing, okay, what does and doesn't work. These are the chords, like, so these are sort of like the core chords, so to speak, that you can't, like, that you know, come on, like, the, yeah, it has like different systems. It's very, very interesting. So it basically, you have like different combinations of notes that they have like a different kanji, and it works actually on a circle. It works on a, not a pendulum, sorry,
but like again, a circle of fifths type of thing, or
yeah, but not fifths, it's a circle of chords, but then all of them have different meanings and stuff like that. I really hope I'm not bastardizing this as well, but like
I wouldn't know if
no problem. I know.
I know, you know.
No, but basically what happens is that we did a lot of workshopping and just said, okay, how do we make sure that, like, is this good? Is this okay?
Right.
How, why, and when, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is that like, sorry, because excuse my ignorance on this. You're saying like, is that good? As in like, if you were to use it incorrectly, it would be disrespectful?
Well, it might not, like, I don't know. But the problem is I don't know.
Right, okay. Right,
yeah,
right.
And
right.
I'd rather, like...
You don't want to overstep the boundary just in case.
Yeah, I'd rather ask too many questions and just, like...
Yeah.
Or to be just said, no, don't worry about it. It's great. It's fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it. But that's not my permission to give.
Yeah.
So once I've received it, then I feel, okay, let's... Now we can record. Now we can actually, you know, work with these instruments. And right. obviously, yeah. like, being commissioned to do something which is anime, obviously Star Wars as well, but, like... doing something that is anime,
yeah,
and in this case has a very specific relationship to Japan and its instruments. Mm. That's super important for me to make sure that, like, you know, I get that right.
Mm.
I don't want to fuck it up.
Yeah, right. Of course,
I really don't.
Yeah.
Is there ever like a difficulty when you're working on a property that has had so much history and previous works that you could kind of get lost in inspiration with?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not. It's not an easy one.
Right. Star Wars has a lot of music, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It has a lot of the best music. Because
I guess you're just like naturally going to be compared to the likes of like John Williams, right?
So
it's like,
it,
yeah. I mean, but you don't want to sound too much like that.
The thing is, like, because you have listened to it. There's no way you have not listened. You can't unlisten what you have. But like, I mean, thankfully, because it's anime, because it's not live action, you actually... we almost in a way had a little bit more freedom
because
we were trying something new. And that was one of the ethos of the show. At least, you know, that was one of the core concepts of the show was to, you know, obviously be in the universe, but then to explore it in a medium that, you know, I've been not only lucky enough to be part of, but I really do genuinely love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, because like I remember like watching that episode, and I was like, of course, I got to support my boy Kevin. Of course, I'm going to watch Star Wars Visions, and I remember like going to this episode, and I was just like, this is like definitely Star Wars, but this is like such a Kevin Star Wars. I'm like, I don't know, like I'm not like well versed enough in like musical lingo to be able to like break down what makes it a Kevin Star Wars. It just felt like a Kevin Star Wars, a Kevin take on the Star Wars, universe, and just, you know, the iconic music as well.
Is that something you do unconsciously? Like you have a kind of a signature almost to your music?
That's a good question. I'm not actually even sure. Like, you know,
I think regardless of whether you like aim to do it or not, I think you've achieved it.
Do you think that when people listen to your music without knowing you, like, or they have heard your previous works, they can identify another one of your work?
Yeah, because actually I didn't even know that you did the music for that episode, but as soon as like the episode started playing, I'm like, this is Kevin. I already know my boy.
Yeah.
I may gravitate towards certain classic courses, put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know, I wouldn't know how to put my finger on it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know how to do that, but... I think in a way, like, it's both a very endearing thing to hear, and at the same time, I'm like, okay, how can I do that next time? So it's almost like, no, because it's a great thing to hear, and I am happy to hear it. At the same time, I'm like, okay, I do eventually want to, like, it sounds a bit fucking wanky, but like I want to evolve at some point.
Yeah, of course.
And I kind of transcend. No, that's too far. You get
a little bit too biblical, man.
Plays the Russian synth.
Well, I mean, one
you have to evolve in every.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, of course. Yeah,
you got to stand tall.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because as we were mentioning before, I just turned 30, and so I've started like putting together like the list of, okay, what do I want to do in like the next 10 years? Like, what do I want to do between 30 and 40? And one of them is like just to like, I want to learn to sing again, because I used to sing and I used to not be totally shit at it. Now I sound like... pretty sure, like, if like
bit out of practice.
Yeah, let's just say if like the cat was angry and screeched, it would still sound better than what my voice would sound
like
in my attempt.
You're being dramatic.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Like knowing you, Kevin, you're probably a lot better than what you think.
I think that's just your musician side saying that. Yeah.
But so like I want to sing again. I want to like.
Well, we got to go to karaoke to find out, don't we?
Fucking go.
No, like. The like singing, and I want to like kind of try a few different music ideas. It would be really nice to do like a personal album the first time. Like I've never really released like a personal album, like personal music.
Right.
So it's been in like for the last, you know, as far as I can remember, like in terms of my professional life, it's always been to a project, which is fucking awesome. But at the same time, I feel like, you know what? In the next 10 years, it'd be good to like really create something like,
That's just you.
Really just me. I got to figure out what that is as well, because like I don't know what I am. So. Well,
welcome to being in your 30s, motherfucker.
Good luck.
Shit. I'm sweating.
I got a little while.
Yeah, but I'm
not like that's like that. You know, that's really respectable though. Like I think as you know, because all of us right now are in kind of the creative field, regardless of if it's different types of creative fields. Yeah, like I think we can all empathize with that like feeling, right? Of being like, you want to get yourself out there and try and spread your wings out as much as possible creatively, right?
Well, I mean, look how much you've grown as well. Like, look at your channel and look at your content and how it's developed. I mean, all three of you, fuck's sake. I mean, like, look at this podcast. I mean, last time we caught up, it didn't exist. And now it is this, your personal channels as well. We watch them all the time. And it's like, we watch the old content, we watch the new stuff. It's I mean, all of it's great, but it is so lovely to see how it has changed and evolved.
Yeah, likewise, man. So likewise.
Thank you.
Likewise with your stuff.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Gentlemen, all men strive for gold in their life, right? Gold medals, gold watches, gold everything. However, there is a certain type of man that goes the extra mile in life. He walks with the confidence of an eagle and giggles in the face of danger. He's big, hairless, and a winning machine, and when he unzips his pants, he sees platinum. That's right, Manscaped would like to introduce to you their biggest, most ultimatest package, the Platinum Package 4.0. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with code TRASHTASTE. The Manscaped brand new Platinum Package 4.0 is the biggest bundle they've ever offered, giving you a bulk discount on Manscaped's top products. That includes the Lawnmower 4.0, of course, the Weed Whacker, 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, deodorant, the Crop Preserver, and also the Crop Reviver, and anti-chafing boxes. So if you want 20% off and you want to get free shipping, use our coupon code TRASHTASTE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping by using our coupon code TRASHTASTE at manscaped.com. Back to the episode.
So I guess while we wrap this up, I got to ask, like, what do you want to explore next? Because you always say you want to do something new. What's like something that you haven't done yet that you want to do?
Like musically speaking?
Yeah, like musically speaking.
I was going to meme for a second. Yeah.
Have a good Burger King burger.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the impossible here. Yeah. Just have to go to the source. I mentioned like the personal album thing. I think what I want to do is expand, which is the best way to describe it, I think.
Right.
You know, I don't mean this in any sort of like shitty braggadocious sort of way. I am very happy with what I've been able to achieve so far.
Yeah,
I mean, I turned 30. I did like these wonderful projects. I met wonderful people. I'm part of a wonderful sort of industry and community. You know, I've got friends and family and all sorts. Like I'm good. I'm a happy boy. I think balance, if anything, is what I want to achieve next.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, next is like, you know, it's been like the pandemic can go suck a massive fat bag of donkey dicks. Like, it fucking sucked. Like, but it put a lot
only
of things.
Bold statements.
But you know, it did put a lot of things in perspective, because like, you know, you could work hard, and that's fine for a while. Eventually, like, you know, not only does your body tell you like you know you got to take better care of yourself. I was mentioning, I think maybe off camera, but like, yeah, put on a fucking load of weight.
Drank
too much, ate too much in the pandemic, and like it was just a way to deal. And fine, we all kind of get it. It's not healthy.
Yeah, you weren't the only one.
I feel like I'm not breaking any fucking.
So you did what?
I think the statement's gonna come as a massive shock that I was a fucking down during the pandemic.
Right.
I'm very not. I'm not very unique to that. I was not the happy all the time. So yeah, I think the one thing that I've, you know, coming into quote unquote endemic, which
endemic.
You know, yeah,
depending. Is that what everyone's calling this?
Is that a thing now?
Is this an Aussie thing?
No, it's called optimism. Optimism?
Optimism.
Fuck! Optimism. So yeah, I'm optimistically calling it endemic-y, and I'm calling it that because like I'm sat here now. I'm on the show.
That's not an Aussie thing, by the way. Here. That's a Kevin thing.
It's like, let it be so.
Yeah.
But like I'm really keen to like just kind of get life back and just feel fucking as normal as best as possible. Like, you know, I want like the day to day to be really productive at the same time. Like I live in Melbourne now. I moved back to Melbourne because I really wanted to be closer to community and family.
Yeah.
And I miss Australia so much when I was living here. And that's why I moved back.
Yeah.
But you know, Melbourne's like a beautiful city to be in, even though we had all these crazy lockdowns and stuff. Like, I'm really happy there. It's a beautiful base. But it is nice to just fuck off and go to Japan and go to America and go to London, or come to London, I should say.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, that almost is like, it's such a pleasure to be here right now because it is a bit of a recharge. And people still can't, I mean, there are some countries that still can't do that. And that, that, you know, you, so you got to really take it, you know, you got to really think of it. That's right now. Pretty lucky in the context of the fact that we are going through a fucking pandemic still. So yeah, balance is what I want to achieve. Between, you know, lifestyle, friends, professionality, work ethic, work quality as well. Like obviously, I don't know how the, you know, it'd be nice to potentially go back to school. Like, not like school, but like, you know, I've tried learning Korean a little bit and still trying that. And still, I've had to kind of, you know, pick my battles in terms of trying to like learn more stuff. But I like the idea of just trying to expand a little bit and try different things. Try a little bit of streaming in like mid 2020 or like late 2020, a little bit of early 2021. I kind of like put it on the back burner because I just got really, really busy with, you know, all some of these projects and stuff. I do miss that. I miss the streaming. It's good fun. You know, just like live composing or like playing old games, like, you know, played like I want to play Metro Prime if it comes out.
Hell yeah.
I played Eco on stream. That was really, really fun. I want to play Shadow of the Colossus and all that sort of thing. Like, that's a fun thing to experience.
All games that have amazing music.
This is why I like them. You know, just like playing games that like are really important to me on stream, or like composing music in front of a live audience, that it almost like activates a different part of the brain a little bit. I guess you can relate it to like content creation offline and online.
Right, live, I should say.
So yeah, expansion and balance, I think, is
expansion sounds like such a I'm British, you know, that word.
I will expand.
Like, we've wanted to have you on since basically like the beginning of the podcast.
We were like, who is would be the most perfect guest for a show like this? The mate Kevin.
I'll mate Kevin.
I have some bad takes for you. I can commit.
And we've had like
or bone in chicken.
Oh, fucking boneless, mate. Come on.
Yes.
Come on. Yes.
Let's go. Yeah,
dude, I'm sorry.
It's my boy.
You have Korean fried chicken. Do you want bone chicken or do you want like a fucking beautiful.
This is like, you know what? Yeah. It's been a fantastic episode. We'll bond together. We'll bond together.
Look, I appreciate that you've come to terms a little bit better on bread. I do respect that you are getting better.
Just as a person.
I'm just saying that what do you want to achieve in your 30s and why is it boneless?
I want to expand.
The expansion.
World it's domination.
It's 30s expansion. What can I say, man? We've had to fucking move mountains to get you on because we're not filming in Australia. We're not filming in Japan. We're filming in fucking the UK. Neither of us even live in.
It's a weird detour.
Detour, but it's nice that we are able to make this happen. Finally.
Absolutely. Hopefully, when Japan decides not to,
Mate, please come. Please come back because we've gone 2 hours and somehow we've not talked about Oolong High, Oolong Dai. We're not going to, by the way.
That's the next time.
This
is the sober conversation. This is like the pre-convo.
Next time you come on, we have to.
Second episode is going to be Oolong High.
This is the thing. It's like, this is almost like, you know, this is season one. this is the conversation we should have had in the old studio. Now I've got to come to the new studio. We've done one call. Now we've got two calls. Honestly, we're going to do 1.5% more alcohol.
Hell yeah. But I guess we'll leave it there for the time being. You know, obviously we're going to get you back eventually in Japan. Hopefully with a little bit more booze and a little bit more bands. But hey, in the meantime,
we're trying not to talk about fucking synthesizers for like 3 hours. Oh
man.
Let's see
which ones I get between now and then.
We'll hear your top 10 synthesizers list pretty soon.
I've got a list. I've got a fucking list, man. Actually,
do you not know? Tell me off camera.
I was going to tell you at dinner.
But hey, look at all these patrons, though. These amazing, lovely patrons. Look at them, Kev. Look at them. They're just floating by. Oh my god, so many of them. Who's your favorite?
That one.
I was like, god damn it. But hey, if you'd like to support the show, then go over to our Patreon, patreon.com/trashtaste. Also follow us on Twitter, send us some memes on the subreddit, and if you hate our face, listen to us on Spotify. And hey, go check out Kev's stuff. Yeah. Wait, is there anything you want to shout out? By the way?
The Twitters, and obviously like Made in Abyss is coming up in July.
Which I'm so fucking pumped.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about Made in Abyss 2.
Maybe next time. Maybe next time.
Well, it'll be out by hopefully like next time we like hang out, so we can finally talk about it in depth.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things going, but most of them, it's like, think of it as like there's like a little pinpoint on your head with a sniper rifle at the end of it, and you know, you're just like, oh, I'm going to talk about.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, but, I'm ready to be depressed.
Right. Welcome to club, buddy. Yeah. Hello to my friend.
Well, thanks for coming on, Kev.
My pleasure. Thank you to all. And on a final note, I just want to say thank you to all three of you both personally, and it's been nice.
Man, what a lad.
What a fucking lad. That's why he's our boy.
What a nice boy.
Love you all. Thank
that's
you.
That's our man's right there.
It's the most wholesome ending to trash this episode ever.
Thank you for doing what you do.
Yeah,
of course. Oh, likewise, man.
You're going to cry? You're going to cry?
Thank you for helping both of us through this, because it's been a really bad pandemic. It's nice to...
Sorry,
I don't know.
Come here, man. Come here.
Sorry. I thought like maybe if I got like fucking drunk, I'd like, upset. I didn't expect it to be like sober, but seriously, thank you for doing what you do. It really helps. Yeah. It's really nice every Saturday to come like wake up and watch Trash Days. It's lovely to see your content.
We will.
Thank you for doing what you do, because it does
Man. Lots of love, likewise.
Made for life, man. I'm just happy that I'm gonna hang out again, man. I'm so fucking happy, man.
Fuck, can I please have a drink?
That's the